Hey, it's Chris, the host of We Are Libertarians, here along with Greg.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
And we will be live out of Morty's Comedy Joint on May 23rd with Rupert Bonham from Survivor for We Are Libertarians Live. We're going to do our second live show.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it, aren't you?
Yeah, we had 53 people show up to the last one. We knocked it out of the park. Everybody was thrilled. Everybody had an amazing time. We got standing ovations.
Did we?
We did.
I got compared to Hitler a lot. I don't think that was that fun.
I thought it was a great time. Yeah. So, if you want to join the party, it is Morty's Comedy Joint in Indianapolis, May 23rd at 7 p.m. After the show, there's going to be live band karaoke. You can karaoke with a live band at 9 p.m. So it's only $5. And listen, the person that brings the most first-timers will get $50. $50 prize to the person that brings the most friends. This is a great outreach event. We're going to do it every month, and we need you there. So hit our Facebook, like the page, share it, bring your friends, and we'll see you on May 23rd. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. To my right, as you heard on the last episode, Greg Lenz joins us.
Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. And across the table from me is Jeremiah Morrell. Morrell?
We'll go with Morrell today.
All right.
What a treat it is to have old Jer back.
I know. We were in Henry County last night.
We were.
Indeed.
Super
secret planning mission.
Well, we had to lay a wreath upon his statue there at the 4-H grounds in Henry County.
One day I'm going to actually take you out there, and you're going to have the time of your life.
I can't wait till people come up and be like, you know, Jeremiah Morrell.
Anytime anybody from the wilds of Indiana, from the rural country, says, I'm going to take you out there and you're going to live it, I get real nervous, Jeremiah.
You should.
So thank you for joining us this week. We're going to talk a little bit about, I don't even know, we haven't even really talked about what we're going to talk
about. Well, I have. All right. I was actually prepared for it last week, and then Rob Kendall decided to have a bromance, you know.
Yeah, we need to talk about Rob.
Oh, God.
That was, I listened to that episode. You guys published it Thursday, I think, like Thursday. And I had a busy day. I turned it on, I listened, and I couldn't turn it off. I was 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning listening to you guys.
Were you really?
I really was.
Riveting.
Wow. It was one of the best episodes that I wasn't on in a long time.
I heard from a few people how much they liked it.
Really? I mean, I love having Rob on because I love how much you love to give him a hard time.
I also heard how many people absolutely hated that episode because I turned into a libertarian podcast and you guys are defending Donald Trump. I'm like, listen, bro, I told the guy on Twitter, I was like, I have nothing to do with that. I disagree vehemently with Rob and Greg on Donald Trump. I think he's terrible.
Well, we're on the side of Walter Block. I don't know who you're with.
We had the insight
the
into
side
the
of principles and liberty.
He wrote the book Defending the Undefendables.
Listen, let me tell you something, Greg Lenz. You better not wrestle me right
I
now.
I know.
I have dirt on you.
Oh, no. Oh, you have dirt on
me. I'm trying to be respectful.
Okay.
Well, that took a minute and a half.
It did.
Going back to last week's episode for you, before you go too far off into the ditch here, dear leader, it was really neat to listen to the inside Republican baseball talking about the impact that this show and you guys have made.
Yeah.
And the meme team that Greg Lenz is.
The meme boys.
And, you know, getting the next senator from Indiana, potentially, to use force against our dear man.
He tried to intimidate me.
That's that is not what you'd expect out of a Marine.
No, because he's only 5'9". I could have just picked him up and thrown him around.
And then Greg took out a Sharpie and drew a meme right on his face.
I did. I IRL well, that, memed him.
A little Hitler mustache right on the lips there.
Did he look like this?
No. That looks like Confederate Hitler.
Yep. That's little Brett Bittner. Oh, man. Brett made me write. We wrote out to a Rex Bell for Governor planning meeting. Rex is running for governor against Mike Pence and John Gregg here in Indiana. And I rode with Brett Bittner. I get in his car. Everything's on military time because wouldn't you figure little Brett Bittner would be on military time?
He is punctual.
Yes. And then he was like, so, do you guys want to listen to Hamilton? I was like, what's Hamilton? He goes, it's a musical. I was like, can you just steer it right off the interstate into that ditch for me?
Well, he was a ballerina for like a long time.
Really?
Yeah. His sister like was a professional dancer and like
well I know that courses.
He's but no
he was one
trained.
Too. He's classically trained. Yeah.
You're telling me that Brett Bittner was a professional dancer,
ballerino, not professional, but
80
like,
pounds.
You know,
ago,
like how you take like piano lessons and you never like get into Juilliard, but like you did it and you become pretty solid. You know, like Chloe does is her talent for Miss Indiana
professional dancing.
That's not professional when you Chloe. Brett would not win amateur hour at the ballerina strip club.
Chloe, he's stripping at his own pace. Did you put Little Bittner in the corner?
I can just see us throwing pennies at Brett while he's dancing. Not $1 bills. Just chucking
earn it.
Pennies
oh,
at
earn
him.
It.
If any of us ever worked at a strip club, it would be, there would be, A, it'd be the best attended amateur night of all time. And B, I can't imagine the photographs that would be taken and posted to me if I were on stage.
Ugh. A comedy club in the spring.
Yes.
By September, we're going to be down on the southeast side at the
Classy Chassis.
At the Classy Chassis.
All right.
Well, look, there's my hi, Kitty.
Yeah.
You've got to, I don't want to interrupt, Chris, but you have a feline walking across your board, and I know that's delicate.
Yeah, listen, my board is very big. I have a very big board, unlike Rob Kendall.
You've got so many inputs over there.
I've got 8 inputs. Rob only has 4. He's half the man I am.
He has half the board you do.
I know. I was listening back. My favorite line was, I think you're obsessed with my girlfriend. I think your girlfriend's obsessed with me. I was like, oh, I'm so funny. Oh, man, look at me go.
I liked that it got to some raw emotion in that element because I was
nerve-struck.
I don't listen to many past episodes, but I couldn't wait to hear that cringeworthy moment and see if I could detect any real butthurt. And
between me or him,
you and both of because you were butthurt because you thought he thought you actually would try to cuck him, and then
I mean, there's no doubt that I could, but I wouldn't because I'm listen, I'm a man of honor, and I would never foul any woman that he was dating. Not dated. But
just as it's currently happening, you reserve all resources in the future.
Listen, as long as you get permission, right, yeah. Greg?
I don't know why I keep being drug into this.
Oh, you just wait.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want? Mittens, get out of here. But I had not yet listened to the Donald Trump interview. Okay, all right. Mittens is getting the hell out of here. I said Trump. I said Trump, and she beat it, man. She was out of here.
Apparently, she's got some Mexican in her. She had to go right over the wall.
She could climb the wall.
Oh, there's no doubt. She can do a standing 6-foot jump. You make that foot. Make that a 6-foot-high wall. She's out of here. I had not yet listened to the Trump interview when when I posted it. I finally sat down and listened to it. But I was like, if we're going to put this in the feed and thousands of people are going to hear it, I might as well listen to it first.
Absolutely professional.
I have never heard a ball licking like that. I mean, that was literally audio filleting the next... You know,
Goebbels would have sat there and cringed hearing something so propaganda.
I don't think Kim Jong-un gets the same treatment in North Korea their media.
It was stunning. It was so unbelievable. I mean,
Mr. Trump, thank you for saving us. I'd like to start this interview with.
He goes, Mr. Trump, you were so wonderful. Oh my God, look at the size of that. Mr. Trump. You can tell you love every state that you visit. Mr. Trump, you could do anything you wanted. You're just the greatest at everything you choose to do. You're incredible. And at the end, he's like, gee, I wish all the media were like this. Yeah, because you're a dictator-like, what is that T word?
Totalitarian?
Totalitarian jerk-off. And
I don't think that's the formal term.
And this is your little Goebbels here, you know, saying... I'm apoplectic.
It's the media Mike Pence wanted to create last year.
Oh my God! Yeah,
it's what it is. It's the staff journalism that's going to write press releases and interview.
It's 10 minutes of ball washing, and I don't mean the kind on the golf course. I mean it is unbelievable. You have to listen to it because I couldn't determine if it was Borat like performance art, and he was doing the Trump character to Trump to see if he would kick him out of the room or love it, which of course he loved. A copy of himself talking to himself, or
I think it was sincere, Chris.
I do too, because the first couple times he came on here, he was like, I was offended at how nice he was to me and how complimentary he was to me. Like the first time he came on the Shill Report, he was on there, and then the first time he was on, he was like, "You are just the best. You are so great, Chris. You are just the best."
Rob's like, the best guy, though. I'm like he's a really
don't
nice
you
guy.
Sit there and say that to my face.
Yeah, I'm in the Libertarian Party. We talk shit about each other. That's what we do.
You're not supposed to be nice to me. If you want to be my friend, you have to talk shit.
Yeah.
Well, you were the first episode that had it, but they're Hammer and Nigel. He did Hammer and Nigel sometime this week, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a similar story. Yeah. This one was much better, though. It was an easier listen on the We Are Liberty.
Yeah, well, of
course. We're supposed to be on Central Indiana today, his Rob show early next week, maybe?
I think so. Yeah. At some point.
As long as Ted Danson doesn't take your spots, I suppose, right?
Well, actually, we're going to be discussing the Libertarian Convention, I believe, and Rex Bell's candidacy. So, you know, you might want to give us some talking points, or you can just let me run with it.
I think we trust you completely, Greg, right. in all of the image for that.
I will.
That's not what you told me in privately.
No, God. No.
Are you saying that I am not earned the trust of the legend of Henry County?
You have of me, but of him, he's like, let me approve those memes.
Oh yeah. That's because everyone has to approve.
Everybody has to approve their own stuff.
I would never put something out without getting it approved unless it was Spangle.
As much fun as I have with you guys, you know, we do take the campaign for Rex very seriously, and I've kind of stepped into the role of keeping the trains on time as a campaign manager and whatnot, and working with Rex. And
he was campaign manager raped.
Yeah. When you took the lead, I was like, well, that was a stupid decision.
Yeah. I guess
there goes his social life, his friendships, his sanity.
Yeah, I've just...
His HTML knowledge, though, has skyrocketed.
Yeah, I've learned more about web interfaces and systems and everything else in the last 2 days than I cared to know. Need to know.
So. They're not arguing about policy positions. They're not arguing about fundraising letters. They're arguing about what the website should look like.
Which platform?
Yeah.
Which content management system?
We're going to stay on track, and we are going to run the greatest libertarian campaign.
Mandatory freedom.
Mandatory freedom.
Top down, centrally planned freedom.
I'm just petting mittens with my...
With your Rex Bell cat scratcher.
That's right. That's a cat scratcher.
Those, I think, alone were good for 10 or 20 votes at the convention.
Easily, yeah. So. Oh, look at the way she loves it.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
That is an endorsement right there
that
for a candidate
for
governor.
That feels good right on her butt.
You know, Spangle's pussy does get matty.
You got to really comb it out.
So, well, it's my first time
He's playing a dangerous game, isn't he? He's playing a dangerous game.
It's high risk.
He's daring me.
It is high risk. This is the first time since the convention we've been able to get together and talk. And I was very, very happy with the results, obviously, being on Team Rex.
Yeah.
And,
actually orchestrating the entire thing.
Yep.
It worked out well. But I do want to commend Jim and his people, too. Jim Wallace's group. They did a very good job. And Jim was there throughout the entire convention and continued to... continued to stay a part of the libertarian movement, which we're very happy about.
Absolutely,
look forward to him contributing to the party going forward.
What is? I know he's taken on some new roles. What's his role going forward going to be? Any idea?
I haven't heard of a specific role for him yet.
Okay,
you know, like anybody, you know, in November when you finished a campaign, or if you go through a primary or a libertarian nomination process, and it doesn't go your way. Everybody wants to take a little bit of a break and reset, figure out what you're doing next.
If you win.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, we've had more excitement from people, you know, Rex and myself and the people that are working on his group going into the convention. You get to that point and you've been working very hard to get through that and get your message out, doing events, and, you know, you've been traveling the state all over the place. And then you win, and then all the people come out of nowhere, and you're like, I've been going nonstop for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you don't get a break. You have just events. It's been unbelievable, the schedule we've had. And hopefully it's like that across the country, but I know it has been here in Central Indiana where we're raised.
When I was executive director, you go to the convention, and you have all these candidates who are signed up, and like they're just beginning, and you're like, crashing at the finish line of putting on a convention for 150 people, and then they're all ready to go. And so, like, the one day, that Sunday, that Monday, the one day where you're just like, I need to sleep all day, is the day that your phone is ringing off the hook, and that it's just, you don't get a break. Like, politics is the people business, so there's a lot of communication and talking to people, and if you're not good with people, if you're not energized by people, then it can be pretty rough. Yep.
You know? Well, you need to strike when the iron's hot. I mean, we raised a bunch of money for a libertarian campaign. We raised a bunch of money in that first 3 or 4 or 5 days after the convention. And that's what you have to do when you have a peak or there's an issue that hits. You know, if you're working from the political side of this, that's the time you go and you make it happen. And now we're into the point where we're doing the planning and the processing and getting into the stretch for the summer for volunteers and doing the rest of those,
flushing
the
out
stuff.
The yeah. campaign strategy.
Exactly.
Yeah, because in a campaign, especially like at a statewide level, especially if you're a libertarian, here in Indiana, you're in the televised debates. As the media formed, it's the Indiana Debate Commission, and because we're automatically on the ballot here, they put us in there. But as a libertarian candidate, you get the day after the convention, you get the televised debates, and you get the 2 weeks before Election Day. And like those are the three times that anybody cares about your existence. You know that. So
you just got to ride that cresting wave when you can actually, you know, capture somebody's attention.
Exactly. That's right.
That's it. And hopefully we'll find some ways to create some more media for ourselves along the way. But
you just got
to
drop nukes into the ocean and then watch as the waves go high.
That's what I'd recommend.
Maybe that may not, that might not work. That might be a bad idea.
Well, Lake Michigan's not Indiana based, but maybe Lake Michigan will be, not the Atlantic or the Pacific, but yeah, we'll just drop some nukes into the lake.
Yes.
Lake Michigan.
Let's be the first ever libertarian state party to announce a platform of forceful annexation of the neighbor to our north for water access.
I like it.
Alpha.
Well, I want to thank a couple people. Our good friend, Tiny. Of the Obsessive Viewer podcast.
Anthony, yes, the Obsessive Viewer podcast.
It's Alex's brother.
Yeah.
All right. So Alex is a donor to the Libertarian.
A good buddy of mine.
To We're Libertarians. Still waiting on Tiny to pony up. But do the Obsessive Viewer podcast.
He came out to the live show.
Yeah. Which, again, we're going to have one on May 23rd. We'll talk about that in a minute. So we want to thank Alex. We want to thank Nick, last name withheld out of shame. And Jason Doolittle for signing up to be contributors. If you donate at WeAreLibertarians.com, you can sign up to do a per show. So we get rewarded when we do the work. It's very libertarian of us through Patreon. You can also sign up, do a monthly pledge. You can sign up for $7 a month and join what, Jeremiah?
The Jeremiah Moral Pizza Society.
Right.
Where is the pizza, by the way?
I think we've had a FUBAR moment. I sent my contribution in, and I thought that was going to buy me pizza the next time I guest host.
You would think that.
But
is this pizza washing instead of money laundering?
I send in $7. You'd think once in a while you could get a damn pizza. But apparently,
well,
that's not the way this works.
No.
It goes to ads and Facebook likes.
I actually was going to bring you a pizza, but you had dinner before. Because when I saw that you were having dinner before, I was like, if I'm not going to go get Giacomo's Slaughterhouse 5 if he's not going to eat it. You know, or he's not going to want it because nobody wants that after they've already had dinner because it's like the heaviest pizza ever.
Joke's on him. He went to see Evan McMahon and did not get anything.
Yeah, imagine that. Evan,
oh, you didn't have dinner?
Well, no, I have not eaten yet. No, I am.
Oh,
I, this
so
is
sorry.
This is cranky Jeremiah.
I have some chips and salsa in there.
No, we're all right.
All right.
Joe's back there?
Joe Ruiz, your good friend. But no, we have taken your contribution and we have applied it to Facebook to do several things. Grow our likes. We're up like 300 in the last week. We're skyrocketing on Facebook. We've added, you know, several hundred people over the last 2 or 3 months to the subscription of the podcast.
Have you guys passed This American Life yet?
On
iTunes?
Yes.
Yeah. It's I know it's coming. That day is coming.
On Mexican iTunes, okay? But not American iTunes.
Going back iTunes.
Right.
Gary Johnson's New Mexican iTunes.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But in the Libertarian, there are no rankings, but I am sure that we are number one in Libertarian podcasts.
Well, it's hard to compare us to anybody else. Like Tom Woods is, you know, interview-based and, you know, pretty policy-based. And then
there is no other show like this. No. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I spend a ridiculous amount of time in the, you know,
in the car,
on the road. And I listen to a lot of podcasts. This is the only one I'm on. But there's nothing else like this show. It's a great blend of comedy, of policy, of politics, and just hanging around with your friends.
Yeah.
And whether I'm here in person or
give
I'm
him
listening,
$7 back.
It's the same thing.
I'm getting on Donato's.com.
No, no, no.
Right now.
I'm an entrepreneur. I am taking his $7, cutting out his endorsement, and then putting $7 worth of ads on that SoundCloud post.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
We're driving numbers here, but yeah, we have a very special show, as we have been told by so many of you, and we want more people to know about it. So we need you to do a few things. Donate. So then we can we'll just put the money towards promoting the message as we see fit and growing this thing. You can share episodes or the website on your Facebook page. If you want to teach a friend about libertarianism, then go to WeAreLibertarians.com. Look at the path to libertarianism. Or you can check out the Libertarian Movement button up at the top, and you can find a guide to the Liberty Movement. Share those with your friends. So not only are we giving you an awesome podcast, we're also giving you the tools to convert your friends.
Who will then no longer like you, and you will have no one to share the podcast with.
It's cool to be a libertarian.
We are kind of like, we're right at the wave of like, we're sort of like the first Spider-Man when being a comic book nerd was all of a sudden cool because the movies were blockbusters.
Yes.
I have done this, Spangle's done this longer than I have, but I've been around the Libertarian Movement for about 7 years now. I attended my 7th Indiana
convention.
God, you
guys are establishment.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, I'm wearing my establishment colors today. Wow. Chris wearing his black. We're in it.
I'm like 60 days in.
Yeah.
And already they want you out.
I don't think they ever wanted me in.
They're ready for
yeah, they're going to have to rethink that, send $25 and be a member thing.
Who asked me? I said, Jeremiah, are you sure? And you said, Greg. Greg, we're going
to
need you.
Better to have you, Greg.
Oh,
no,
boy.
There's no doubt. We're effective and inclusive, right?
All right. Yes, yep. We are. Yes.
So anyway, the Spangle has
childish.
Spangle has taken a souvenir,
a scalp.
I found something at the LP convention, and it is hanging proudly on his wall of trophies. He has a signed David Letterman picture.
Uh-huh.
He has multiple awards from the Libertarian Party of Indiana. He's got his Wayne Allen Root hat from the We Are Libertarians live show.
Yeah.
He's got his asshole merit badge. He's got a signed Rupert sign. And he has the scalp that he took at the Libertarian Party of Indiana convention this year.
Listen, Jeff is a dick. And so he left his name tag, and I took it, and it hangs on my wall of trophies. And I'm happy to not have you. So
anyway, what I was saying before we got off on this tangent is we've attracted a lot of new people.
Yeah.
And
many new scalps.
I've done this for 7 years, and it has been a tidal wave of excitement from people.
Yeah.
And it's coming from a lot of different areas. It's coming from We're Libertarians. It's coming from people that are just tired of Trump and the politics as usual.
And Hillary. Awful.
And, mm-hmm. and people that have lurked, and you've added Facebook friends, and you've grown your circles, and people have seen, well, this Jeremiah guy or this Greg guy, he talks about stuff that actually does make sense. And people have come in the last 6 weeks out of the woodwork and gotten involved. We had more volunteer requests. I have been working to affiliate counties around the state of Indiana. I've got first-time candidates running for Congress. I've literally been busy 3 or 4 nights a week because the libertarianism, we are seeing a change and a tidal wave has hit. And I want people to take away from this episode, my portion at least, that you've been in the wilderness for a long time, but people are paying attention now.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, libertarian guys get all the hottest chicks, right, Greg?
No doubt.
So
How did we go from the cresting peak and the momentum of libertarianism and everything on the, you know, this, all this excitement and momentum that we have to this?
We got to what people care about.
No, we didn't.
Which is women. Right, Greg?
Wine, women, and song.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I joined the party.
It was cool?
I became a libertarian because of Ron Paul in 2008.
I thought you became a libertarian because they paid you to be a libertarian. That's not right?
No. I started making fun of Ron Paul in 2007.
I did, too. I thought he was going to get us killed. I was a Huckabee guy.
Right,
I legitimately watched the presidential debates that year and thought, Ron Paul is literally going to get us killed. His foreign policy is going to lead to our untimely deaths.
Somewhere in the archives, and maybe if I get some time, I will take that and add it to the end of this episode, I was on WXNT in 07, 08 making fun of Ron Paul. So I'll see if I can't dig that up. But the last bit for me that was the domino that finally fell for me was the foreign policy aspect, thanks to Ron Paul. And so I became aware of the Libertarian Party because of Andy Horning.
Yep.
Andy Horning made me a libertarian. We'll talk to Andy here coming up soon. I just realized that my Rush Limbaugh talking points no longer made any sense because Abdul just obliterated all that, and I was politically homeless, and then I found the Libertarian Party. And I kept looking around saying, why is the Libertarian Party not functional? And it was because there wasn't a hired executive director, and there weren't enough people volunteering, and so
party of should.
Exactly right. Everybody thinks the Libertarian Party should do something, they ought to do something, but nobody ever wants to actually get in and do something.
Or they do, and they get burned out because they just keep taking on thing after thing after thing and just never get any thanks.
Yeah, other than like an election day or a convention day, the busiest day when I was executive director of the Libertarian Party was the day after McCain lost in 2008. We had never had that many phone calls and information requests like we had that day. And then, you know, then people in 2012 felt like, yeah, I'm sort of with you, but we need to stop another Obama term. And I feel like we're at that moment. So now, once with the election of Trump, we're now back to that same sort of momentum that got funneled into starting the Tea Party in 2009, 2010. You know, that the loss of McCain, okay, I gave the establishment a chance. Their guy lost in McCain. So now we've got Obama. I'm going to go be pissed off in a tea party. And that has become ineffective because it is socially conservative.
I just see that the actual emotion is different. So, like, the reaction isn't a call to arms emotion like the Tea Party seemed to be. From people I'm talking to, it's, I really don't think I'm even going to vote. I have no hope
that
it's going to change, and I'm going to sit it out. Which, I mean, I hate it that that's the case, but because a lot of libertarians would say that's the ideal. There isn't anyone, unless, you know, we get our candidate out in front of enough people and he presents, you know, the libertarian message in a compelling way that inspires people and speaks to them at a personal level. We're going to look at record low turnout and the sort of a era of post-Nixon crisis in American politics where it's, yeah, they're all crooked, to hell with it. After something like where Obama, when he came in, it was a Kennedy moment where it was, yes, yes, we can create the world we want.
But out of that Kennedy moment was formed the Libertarian Party.
Barry Goldwater.
Barry Goldwater was then the Ron Paul of then, and then it became the, you know, the Libertarian Party. When Nixon took us off the gold standard, David Nolan said, "Ah, to hell with this," and started the Libertarian Party nationally in 1972. You can look up, there's a video on YouTube, The History of the Libertarian Party, or Brian Doherty's Radicals for Capitalism is a great book about the history of the Libertarian movement, not just the party.
The movement.
I will say that, like, we because I am a Libertarian Party person and have always been identified kind of like that's what I was known for when, and this started at the Libertarian Party, but We Are Libertarians is nonpartisan. If you're a Democrat, if you're a Bernie bro, if you are a Republican, if you are not a voter at all.
A Derek Michael Reed Libertarian.
Welcome. We do not discriminate. Greg is a scumbag Republican most of the time.
No, I'm a Libertarian Party member. You're stuck with me. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
I keep trying to give you back.
I know.
Jared, you were around in 2012.
Absolutely.
You kind of came along in 2010 because you... How did you end up deciding, listen, I'm done with the GOP?
I was... I've spent a lot of time thinking in the last couple of weeks about my evolution in libertarianism, because I took the world's smallest political quiz, and man, I was not at 100-100. I was like a 70-80 guy.
I was still pretty strong, though. I was
a pretty well there, but I was like, man, I don't know if we need to totally legalize all drugs, and you know, yeah, we should cut spending on the government, but you know, we probably, you know, what, I don't remember what the questions were, but there was some moderation. I was not a yes, absolutely, and now I'm, you know, 90-100-100-100. That's where I'm at, and I understand it. But I came along, and there was like this crossover point where I had been the conservative Republican coming from the Mike Huckabee, or you know, the guy that just lost the Senate race here, Marlon Stutzman. I was kind of in his camp when he was running for U.S. Senate 6 years ago, and when he lost, the Republican Party totally abandoned him. He ran for that seat 6 years ago. The Republican
Party kind of ate their own.
Realized he wasn't going to win. He couldn't win. They went to Virginia, recruited former Senator Dan Coats, said, "Hey, come on back to Indiana for 5 minutes. We'll make you senator again." And
where was I senator?
Exactly.
I was a senator.
What?
And that's when I said, "Well, they This is really broken. There's no way in the world you can change with me inside. And I had been flirting around the edges, meeting some libertarians, and then I finally jumped in with both feet, and I haven't left.
Well, you're establishment now. That's it. So and when now, I hear you reflecting, what I actually hear is you crafting like your creation.
It's what spawned me. Everybody's got their origin story, and that's mine. And now I just walk around in khaki pants and a black shirt. And
like the establishment.
And spread the message of the Libertarian
you
Party.
Say, yeah, you know, son, when I joined.
When I joined, we had...
At the club.
We had Microsoft DOS.
Yeah.
Wait,
and an executive
still
director.
Still don't have a database.
No.
So in 2012, do you remember hearing Gary Johnson's name in the primary at all?
I do. I was pretty well tuned in. So, and that's another thing I think Gary Johnson does have in his favor. I mean, Limbaugh was talking about him at that time.
He stole Limbaugh's line.
That's right.
He had the shovel-ready jobs
comment in New Hampshire, and Gary ran really hard in that race.
Yeah.
And he was, you know.
With Ron
I think,
being in, though, that
just... It was the timing was not right. And in 2008, they had an event. Gary, that was the first time I really learned about Gary Johnson, this governor of New Mexico.
He got written about in the American Conservative, like, as the most interesting man in politics early on when he was still at the end of his governorship.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was a Ron Paul event that they had in 2008 when Ron lost the nomination in 2008.
Yeah, it was the Restore the Republic rally.
It wasn't
the
rally, it was the Restore the Republic rally. So Gary Johnson spoke at that, and that was the first time that Gary was on my radar. Because I had followed Republican politics in 2008, and I still was one. So I kind of learned a little bit about Gary then, and then I followed him in 2012. And then I was very excited when he dropped out of the Republican Party and joined us, and, you know, he did the right things, made the right steps, and now he's back again. And I really hope that he's been invigorated in the last couple of weeks. You know, as he's run this race, I don't think it's any surprise or any – he had some missteps on the front end.
I think he didn't –
with the burkas and some other things where it just didn't – it wasn't the race that we had all hoped for him to start with, but I think he's picking up steam. He was on ABC, I think, Sunday with George Stephanopoulos.
That 11% number, because that was an early poll, and I forget who was it.
CNN
PPP?
Or Monmouth, I think.
Monmouth
but
poll.
CNN
was.
Keeps pushing it.
And it was a national Monmouth poll, and I don't think – I know I didn't expect it. I expected 6 or 7, but to see 11 when it was certainly not – it wasn't absolutely clear Trump was going to be the Republican nominee at that point. It seemed, actually, the momentum seemed to be going the other way.
Yep.
I expect that number to go to 16, 17.
Well, the problem is they won't include him. We saw this. When Gary would be included in a three-way race, he would get decent 10% numbers. And so in 2012, his campaign kind of bought into that. And I think they were a little crushed when they got 1% because they thought there's no way we're not going to hit 5.
But people weren't looking in that race.
Right.
They're literally either I'm staying home or someone better woo me that actually has credentials.
I go through the news cycle and the mainstream media is always opining, well, who's the third party candidate? Can there be a third party candidate? And there has to be a point where people figure out, they quit acting like Paul Ryan's going to get in or somebody. I don't know if it was Ted Cruz, Mitt Romney. I heard somebody on our local ABC affiliate they mispronounced it, but Justin Amash. I guess
he's courting the Libertarian Party.
Well, I don't know.
I heard that he's going to show up at the convention.
Well, that would be an interesting convention.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be happy to be watching race cars for 500 miles.
As much as I like Justin Amash, I mean, I get tired of as much as I like him. Republicans come in and say, well, your savior is here. You people are losers, and now
you know,
a winner is
here.
He's
not like that.
He is not.
His
but.
People are like, it's the staffers, the Liberty Bros that you just want to choke to death because they're the most arrogant, condescending sons of bitches on the planet.
Right.
That's but Justin Amash is as libertarian just about as it gets, but he is in a district where he exists. You know, he wants to affect change, so he does have to, you know, work within the framework of a government system.
He fundamentally cannot win our convention because you cannot. A delegate convention fight is so different than what people think of. I mean, it really is about personal relationships. And when you've got Austin Peterson, John McAfee, Daryl Perry, Gary Johnson.
They've been traveling around all of these state conventions, and they've been meeting people.
Right.
And it's as close to the New Hampshire primary process where you've met your candidate 2 or 3 times, and you've had a conversation. And I meet with these people that say, well, Gary's off on this issue a little bit, but when I go to Orlando, I'm going to talk to him. We're going to get straightened out.
Right.
And people really believe it. They know that they're going to get to talk to him and see him, and they're going to have their opportunity to voice that.
Which I hate.
Yeah. I do. I do worry that Gary's not going to get it because of those missteps, because I don't think he expected a tough race. I think everybody kind of wrote off Austin Peterson. Everybody wrote off John McAfee, and they proved to be stronger candidates than anybody realized, including the Johnson campaign.
Well, they treated it like a real campaign.
Right.
All three guys treated it like a real campaign, exactly, worthy of the American voter. And yeah, I think that speaks just mountains about the future of the party.
I didn't know who Austin Peterson was. I wasn't involved in national level libertarianism. So he's just a young guy with a name for me when this started. That's where he started,
right,
baseline,
really,
for me. Yeah, I was not aware of Austin.
Oh, wow.
I've been involved in the Libertarian Party of Indiana politics. I went to one national convention. So national level has always just been, you know, whatever. I've been state and level down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's
me. I'm an LPIN guy.
Yeah. So by default, I started with Johnson. But I'll tell you what, if Austin wins, feeling the Johnson.
Which really is not a helpful not a helpful slogan.
No,
but there's nothing wrong
with that.
For
those of you that keep posting that meme, you're not helping the campaign.
Right.
So it's funny for us. Share it in your internal chats. Please don't post it when they actually talk about your candidate, because it doesn't happen. Don't touch your Johnson. Don't feel the Johnson. Just leave the Johnson out of it.
Leave the Johnson alone.
Leave
boys.
The Johnson out of it.
Say, climb me like one of your African peaks.
You calm down, Mr. Trump.
All right.
Yeah,
anyway.
Austin really, his interview with us was really good.
He's done well. And I take the I side with quiz with Austin, 97%.
I know.
I'm 93% with Gary. 92%.
Well, Gary's 86 with Gary.
Yeah. 80. Well, you're impure.
Yeah. No, Gary took it for
Gary's
himself and didn't get 100.
I thought he retook it and it improved.
Well, he didn't know the drop down, the additional.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I've been very impressed with Austin Peterson, and to the point that unfortunately, there's so much more credibility with Johnson going forward, and things for people to advocate for in his behalf, that we've got an opportunity to actually do something big with Johnson.
Right.
For Peterson, it is going to be, hey, he's the youngest guy, and the founding fathers were real young, and he's right on the points. But Earned Media, Gary Johnson is the smart choice for us. He really is. But if Austin wins, the pure Jeremiah, it's all right. I'll be okay.
Austin is an unapologetic libertarian, and that's what I love. Because there's two kinds of messengers. There's the one that tries to fit the message to sympathetic ears, and there's one that is just brazen, and I'm not going to apologize because I'm a libertarian. This is what I believe. This is right. You're wrong. And if you don't like it, get out.
Yeah.
And I've been dying to hear it, and he does it actually well.
Yeah.
Now, you know, McAfee posting pictures of himself today in the Oval Office, that's gone to the point where it's not credible for me. I don't know.
I don't know what
the numbers are going to be, but, you know, when he had the debate with Stossel, he played the part and he looked reasonable enough. But
he's your VP.
unfortunately, it's just I personally couldn't do it, and I'm not sure he's going to have any coalition of delegates in Orlando to be able to pull it off.
I will say that Stossel debate really put a lot of eyes on these three campaigns, and Johnson was the front runner and the unquestionable...
A two-time governor.
Right.
Versus a meme guy and a fugitive.
Right. And so it was never really credible, and then that race put spotlight on all of them, and, you know... Austin laid a very, very well laid out trap on the gay cake baker stuff, and about gay cakes. And man,
he could do that in a real. If I have to choose based on there is the Libertarian candidate included in a national televised debate, I want Gary Johnson. So I don't even want him calling himself Libertarian. I want Austin up there, going toe to toe with Donald Trump and just bashing him, and everyone will cheer.
So we had something happen.
Personally, I think they will,
but.
I think Gary can get in the debates. I don't know that they'll let Austin into the debates.
You're right. But I'm saying if it were all equal and we had access like an Indiana with the governor's debate, I want Austin going up there and saying, you guys are both wrong, and everyone out here is saying it internally, and they just know that you're bullies and they have to get in line.
Right. So I know that as libertarians, we want to just cast off the mainstream media and all that. But they're talking to Gary Johnson. They have his contacts from 2012. He did a ton of media in 2012, and so he's got those contacts. And all that is very important in a race. I mean, the presidents, your gubernatorial races, your Senate candidates, those are marketing races, and you've got to have somebody that can get their foot in the door. And, you know, can Austin get media being 35 years old? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, he's the reason there was a presidential debate, though.
Absolutely. The party owes an awful lot to Austin for that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe VP. Although, I don't know if Judge Gray, it doesn't matter. It's inside baseball.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Judge Gray is not running. Alicia Dern has announced. Yep. I don't know who else, yep. But it's a totally separate race.
I nominate Chris Spangle. Can I get a second?
Nope. And
he's not old enough. This is the one time Spangle's not old enough for something. Yeah. Normally it's the, you know, hey, I have a 20-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not old enough to be president.
Where are you? Oh, I'm at the liquor store getting her beer. Like a good libertarian.
It's so true.
Not on a Sunday.
I think Gary Johnson, to me, is the guy that is going to get these interviews. He's already getting he's getting more press right now in the primary than he did in the general in 2012. And we saw here in Indiana, when we picked Rex Bell over Wallace, the media establishment went, well, I guess they aren't serious about winning because they picked the party insider over the guy with $1 million to spend on his campaign. You know, which so it puts Rex's campaign at a disadvantage because we did the opposite of what the media expects. And I know that we don't want to, you know, well, it's all about party principle. It's like, no, once you get into politics and once you start talking about Republican Party, Libertarian Party, Democratic Party, you're leaving the realm of principle and you now have to have principles plus pragmatic politics.
And be able to stand out. Yeah. Not be like, well, I'm also a Republican, but not all the way.
So you do have to think strategically what is going to be in the best interest. Gary Johnson, while I'm probably closer to Austin Peterson in principle, Gary Johnson may be the more pragmatic choice, and that's really what matters when we're talking about a political campaign.
They're both, think of them as cars. They are both great cars sitting next to each other on the lot. One is a 2015 Chevy Silverado, and the other one is a 2015 GMC Sierra. One might fit you just a little better, but they're both going to be just fine.
Yeah.
And I'm comfortable with either.
And it's race specific. If this wasn't something where everyone in America was looking for an alternative, then I would say, you know what, Austin's going to be brash enough and you know, challenge the status quo. That
he's more
you know
of a fighter.
If this was a Michael Badnarik year, then yeah.
Yeah, but if it's not, this is a year where they're literally pouring. I mean, there's a Jeb Bush, all these guys signed a pledge saying they'd endorse the candidate.
And
Donald Trump
it.
Got crushed for that. And they're not going to do it. And they might run the flipping Mormon who just keeps losing.
And
he's Adlai Stevenson of the Republican Party.
Here's why I think that Gary Johnson is the smarter play than Austin. It's because this race is about getting disaffected Republicans and Democrats to vote Libertarian this time. And why do I want that to happen?
Public money.
Because every time you pay your taxes, if you pay your taxes, you can check mark a box that says, I'll give $3 to the presidential election campaign.
What Libertarian has ever checked that box? Ever.
I've never.
We're going to spend Democrat money, let's be honest. But we want their money.
Right.
We're going to spend
it. We're just getting it back.
And so if he hits our nominee hits 5% in the presidential race, we get access to public financing. And so what that would have meant is Gary Johnson would have gone from a million or two in 2012. I think it was
It's
80.
Like matching dollars. I think it's matching money.
Is that
really?
All it is?
Yeah. For some reason. The rabbit holes I go down sometimes. But you basically, to get the public financing, you have to show a broad coalition of money. So you've raised at least $100
right,
in this state
and
that state in certain places.
Yeah,
so
with a formula.
Yeah. So it would take some administration to do, but in our position, it's the best way for our party to multiply money. No doubt about it.
There are so many libertarians and just not a ton of Libertarian Party members. Yeah.
Right. And so once you hit that public financing in the presidential race, the race that everybody cares about and everybody can vote in because this presidential candidate, whomever it may be, will be on all 50 ballots. And largely due to Gary Johnson's work over the last 4 years to ensure that he would be on all 50 ballots, he sued the presidential commission so he could get into the debates. I mean, Gary Johnson has done a tremendous amount of work and spent a tremendous amount of his own money trying to ensure that our nominee, no matter whether it's him or not, will have the benefit of those two things, you know, which I think, you know, as much as I like Austin and John, you know, they haven't been working in the party the last 4 years the way that Gary has. And so party loyalty does come into play when you're talking about
in almost every way, he's the perfect. I mean, he just you look at it and you take away the
just
R,
keep
the
him
L
out
L
of
and
bakeries
D.
and he's fine.
Yeah.
And so once
and that
you
will come up at a moderated forum on, you know, it might if he was included, but they're not going to ask Trump and Hillary about that, their perspective on the Libertarian candidate's position.
No, listen, it's inside baseball.
That
for
was
us.
An answer that he was answering like, listen, whatever I say here could be played on CNN 100 million times between now and then. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play it safe, and even if it hurts me in the short term with libertarians, I have the confidence to pull it out. I don't want to lose a general by going on record and saying the most libertarian, you know, which speaks to your Austin point. It you know, and Gary spent 30 minutes trying to explain his position from a very rational. It was very libertarian. He threw a wall of words trying to explain his position.
He spread liberty with this enormous block of text in 8-point font, single-spaced.
So, but once we hit public financing, then you can springboard that into the 15% in polling to get into the presidential debates.
That's when our memes go to TV.
That's right.
Yes, we have our memes will be cartoons.
We will no
They'll
longer
be liberty
just be
tunes.
A digital messaging party. We will be a fully functioning media establishment party.
Memes.
Laugh, but the Marlin thing, the puppet, like, it's real.
I know. So yeah, that's why I think that Gary, you want a credible candidate that Republicans and Democrats are going to feel safe with, and that the media feels safe with, so that way we can get as much exposure now to build as much vote total as we can in November. And then, you know, if you give Austin Peterson 4 years from now that public financing, man, it's off to the races for this party.
Did you guys see the blog post this week? And I know that's the libertarian thing to ask, but the rabbit hole that somebody went down of if Gary wins New Mexico and one more western state, no other candidate gets to 270 and it gets thrown into the House of Representatives.
I did read that. That was in a long, and then the House of Representatives
if
had...
You're a fan of West Wing, I think it's the kind of thing that you'd be into.
But I posted that in the group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But the thing was, it was on like a .wordpress blog. I'm like, this is fantastic writing.
It's
no
not
wonder.
In the Washington Post yet.
Yeah, it's not in the Washington Post. Yeah. But they published. I mean, that is my favorite of the big newspapers. But man, they give like you know, there's not a lot of intellectual thought leaders right now that are young on the left, other than Ezra Klein and Matt Iglesias. And the Washington Post seems to just pick the absolute turds. Like they just put forward the biggest party pundits on the left I've ever seen.
Yeah, what's the woman that writes for the Post for the right side?
Oh, for the right?
Yeah, I forget her name.
Dana Milbank?
No, not Dana Milbank. He's a guy.
Are you sure?
Jennifer Rubin.
Jennifer Rubin,
The worst.
How do you really feel?
She's terrible.
You're a white male.
Disgusting.
President Underwood will take care of that.
Yeah. Can you believe what's going on, though? I mean, George Will is outright calling the guy that is
Mr. Republican,
the foundation of the intellectual right wing, is basically saying, no, let's vote for Hillary.
Yeah.
He's wanting to tear the whole thing. Thomas Sowell's calling for. Thomas Sowell is a Reagan era guy. I mean, he came up with William F. Buckley. He's the best. You know, he was a former Marxist and black liberation theologist in Harlem. Well, he self-identifies,
right?
No, but Tom Sowell, who's out at the Hoover Institute at Stanford, an economist, and you know, he's calling for, this is a guy who's very libertarian, is calling for a military coup if Donald Trump is elected president.
No, let me tell you, it's worse than Thomas Sowell and George Will, who have libertarian tendencies. My grandmother is almost 80. She lives in Florida.
At least you still have a grandmother.
She has
good genes over there, I'll tell you.
Quit talking over me. I will banish you to the hinterlands. My grandma is almost 80 years old. My grandma has multiple pictures that the RNC has sent to her of George W. Bush. My grandma, when she found out in 2008 that I started working for the Libertarian Party, didn't talk to me for 6 months, and finally, my dad made her say Merry Christmas to me on the phone, but she still, it was a year before she really would talk to me on a regular basis. I talked to her on Mother's Day. My grandmother is voting for the Libertarian Party because she hates Donald Trump so much. And I said, aren't you proud of me now, Grandma?
She's basically kamikazing herself because we're going to cut Medicare and Granny's going back.
Paul Ryan's commercial's going to come true.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to vote for the guy that's going to cut off all my medication and surgery, and I'm going to, you know, basically die. That
we just want to give Grandma the choice as to where she wants to go get her expensive insurance on post-Obama world.
I have friends' parents, and they named their dog George W. Bush. They're thinking about voting Libertarian this time.
I mean, you fundraised
George
for Bush.
W. might vote for the Libertarian. He's not going to Cleveland.
I know, neither's
George H.W.'s not going. Nope. Romney's not going.
Jeb.
I don't Little know Jimmy. If McCain's even going to have a job by the time they go.
He's going to lose, I think.
He's struggling. But, I mean, you line up the Republican nominees for president in the last 20 years, and none of them are supporting this guy.
Yeah.
It's just basically Rob Kendall, Greg Lenz, and Bill down there at the Donald Trump.
And he set all-time record votes in the Republican Party. Like, these are just true facts. Like, he set all-time record turnouts, more new entrants into the party and new primary system. He's polling dead even in Ohio. He's pulling dead even in Pennsylvania
and Florida.
In Florida. And I mean, that's a new, he's either going to win and forge a brand new coalition or he's going to lose.
How many different places has he put into play though?
Oh, the old industrial Midwest.
No, I'm saying how many red states has he put into play?
None. I mean, he's going to be fine. He's winning the evangelical vote. He calls it in Corinthians too. And he crushed Ted Cruz.
I'm just saying that when a party loyalist like my grandmother says to me, I never thought that I would find a candidate that would make Hillary Clinton look like a reasonable president and an honest person, I've never seen an erosion like that in my life.
Right, but the establishment practical Republican is going to probably either not vote. Realistically, they're not going to have the enthusiasm to go vote. This will be the first time in their life they'll probably sit it out and hate that they did because of civic duty.
But you cannot have an effective campaign when those people are not going to donate, when those people are not going to show up and vote for you, and they're actively the influencers. The way George W. Bush, if you watch the documentary So Goes the Nation, it was about George W. Bush's miraculous win in 2004 and the campaign strategy that went around that. And, you know, part of their strategy was totally changing advertising to go to Lifetime and ESPN as opposed to CNN.
Right.
Because they said, hey, we need the soccer mom.
Well, Karl Rove identified the biggest and most underrepresented voting bloc in American history, which was the once-a-work church attendee, and that's where they came up with compassionate conservatism.
Right. And so when you have the influencers in a community trashing a candidate, you know, I mean, we all know Hillary. We all are familiar with Hillary. We all hate Hillary. That's why, 8 years ago, it was the most horrendous thing on the planet to say Barack Obama's a socialist. She's losing to a 75-year-old socialist.
Who's not even a member of the Democratic Party.
Right. People hate her so much.
But he is a member of the tribe. And, you know, Zion's a powerful thing.
Right. Well, obviously. I'm just saying, I just don't.
Well, I mean, like,
I don't understand your optimism.
So no, oh, I think I know we have different opinions on this, but I do think Donald Trump is going to win and surprise the hell out of people and forge a new Republican coalition of blue collar Democrats with non-establishment Republicans.
Is he going to be funded well enough? Because he was able to get through and get the, you know, my buddy that's a welder that, mm-hmm. that showed up and wanted to protect, you know, the types of the issues that spoke to him.
The person that wanted to make America great again, as opposed to you who preferred it wouldn't be.
As opposed to me who just wants to burn it down to nothing.
Yeah. You just want to push Granny into a Florida, the Gulf of Mexico.
She's going
to
be in Lake Okeechobee by sundown. I can see him being able to win the primary votes and to get those guys to turn out for him. But it doesn't take that many people to win a primary.
But they're brand new. That's the thing.
Yeah, my mom never. My mom had never voted in a primary, so my mom showed up in the primary to vote for Donald Trump. She's now voting for Gary Johnson after one Mother's Day with me, and that's the problem that your boy has.
I just see it differently. I think Trump's going to win, and everyone's going to lose their mind.
But
the longer he stays around, and you get to know him, the more you get. He's going to grate on people, and the people you're going to lose. Grandma that was going to vote for any Republican, the stock Republican. She's going to stay home, and you don't know if the guy that turned out in the primary is actually going to come back and vote for him in November and be that excited.
And I will say, yeah, he may forge a new Republican coalition. But when Donald Trump is gone, what is going to happen to that coalition? Because his
it'll be Amash and Rand Paul and
Massey. But he's anti-libertarian in so many different ways.
No, but he's not a. This isn't a guy that's going to have a lasting philosophical impact on a political vessel that hasn't had any kind of intellectual leadership in a long time. It's been bankrupt forever. Sure. Conservatism isn't necessarily what the Republican Party is. Conservatism is about the rate of change. It's about being cautious about not taking, you know, not all of a sudden taking cultural norms and just upending them and then creating a backlash. You know, Russell Kirk talked about what conservatism is that you look at everything that's around us today. You look at the institutions we have. It doesn't mean they're great. It means that this is what the smartest minds of a society in the past thought could best handle the situation they had at the time. Doesn't mean it's still well fit to that time they were in, but it's the lasting impact and the lasting institutions and cultural norms of that era. Now, you need to be open to change, because if you all of a sudden just, you know, it's like we talk about the worst thing for libertarianism is if all of a sudden we just, you know, ended the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, no one had any banknotes to go and buy milk. You know, they'd go to a strong man in no time promising free things.
I will finally rise.
Like that's actually what I wanted to kind of talk about is like, you know, the Democratic Party has totally lost its way because it's not even like progressive anymore. And it's never really had the same thought leadership. The Republican Party originally was the party of Robert Taft. You know, Senator Bob Taft was a guy that was an old school conservative. Everything was about, hey, let's slow this down for a minute. Should we go and start nation building? Should we invade Iraq when we were hit by, you know, Saudis? You know, that's the kind of conservatism and Nelson Rockefeller conservatism.
George W. 2000.
He was a liberal. That's the thing people forget. George W. Bush created Medicare Part D. He had the tax cuts because he had to have something that was conservative. And then he invaded and tried to nation build, which is arguably as liberal as you can be in foreign policy.
Well, George W. before 9/11 was towing that line of what was an acceptable libertarian. But the longer he was in office, the more, you know, post 9/11, he turned into an authoritarian and he, you know, Medicaid and it just went down. There were so many, and then the back end of his second term was just god awful.
Oh yeah, I
mean, with the bailouts and everything else. But that first year or so of George W. is that original Republican that I could identify with.
Right. Yeah. It's not someone that necessarily has fixed positions. It is someone that says, listen, let's not just go overturning everything and create a bunch of, you know, basically it's the loud, angry, militant left. If we let them have their way, this is what you get is Donald Trump. If you change society too much from what people are used to, and I saw someone, I know this sounds crazy, write it on 4chan. No, he wrote about what happened, what has explained Donald Trump is that liberalism has been so antagonistic and so shoved down people's throats. Eventually, you create a majority who will all of a sudden they're not afraid anymore, and you're sitting there calling them every ism, and they like it more because now they are in the majority, and you've created that totalitarian.
The pitchforks are out, and they're just coming.
Well, that is what the brutalist overlord James Neese teaches and preaches. He talks about the fact that brutalists just at a certain point go, safe spacers need to be told to shut up and grow up, and you. You know, the world is a tough place, and by being sensitive to people's feelings, you only enable them instead of teaching them the realities of what life is. And you're never going to get through to a Bernie bro. You know, they're so deeply ingrained in where they believe that you're not going to get a rational discussion, a rational thought. So it's not even you shouldn't even treat them with respect.
Right. And I actually had a conversation on this recently.
I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying that's what the brutalist overlord James Neese believes.
Well, he's the internet philosopher.
Right.
He's the Buddha of the internet interwebs.
He's one of the OG 4chaners.
He is. I mean, it's true. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That isn't just in the scientific realm. That's in every
politics.
Realm. Right. It's in politics. You push, 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 make people feel bad, tell them that they're the reason everyone else has a bad life. And eventually, people just zone. They just tune you out and they say, all right, I don't care anymore. And now I've got enough people that agree with me. I can torture the hell out of you and you can sit there and whine about a safe space until you cry yourself to death.
And it doesn't matter what Trump's policies are because it's just
a
protest.
He could go shoot someone in the street and he said it himself. Well, he is a reaction. He is not a movement.
It's like I said. I mean, he is. It's funny to see Ted Cruz burn in the grass fire that he helped light. I mean, he is that 2000.
But he's also a Bush guy.
Well, he's a Theodore, long, yeah, he's a long time guy who wanted just wanted power. But you know, he was part of that Tea Party crowd that are all up for re-election right now. Marco
Rand,
Ted Cruz,
Mike Lee.
Yeah, and there was a lot of anger, and it was populist anger, and there was a firewall in 2012 in the presidential election. Donald Trump burned that down.
Well, that's he's a cultural reaction. He is not a leader per se. He has no consistent political philosophy, but the Republican Party hasn't. They haven't had that since Bob Taft.
I would say that this election cycle, the Christian conservatives just keep getting rejected.
But
rejected,
that's not
rejected.
That's not a political philosophy. That was a forged coalition by William F. Buckley created the new Republican Party by forging together Roman Catholicism and, you know, the Christian right with neoconservatives and then Reagan's supply-side tax cutters. And that's because the Republican Party under, Nelson Rockefeller and Bob Taft just kept getting killed because they couldn't distinguish themselves between the Democrats and all of FDR's things from the New Deal because they didn't have a vision forward. This is where the Party of No came from. It was, slow down. Slow down on all these the New Deal and liberalism and all these ideas of a progressive movement, but they didn't ever present a compelling alternative, and so you end up with where we are today. No one has presented conservative.
There's no party of ideas.
Yeah, anymore. I mean Reagan tells Chris Wallace's dad in his first interview, and you can watch it that what's at the heart of conservatism? Well, it's at libertarianism. This is in 1978.
Yep.
You know, and that's the truth because you had people like Frank Meyer. In the intellectual right. There's no one like that anymore. George Will issues commentary on things like, he flirts with libertarianism, but then when push comes to shove, he supports Hillary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you've got Tucker Carlson, maybe. I mean, it's
maybe.
And this is why I'm not a Republican. Right. There is nobody over there that I can look at and say, that's my guy.
Amash, Massey, and Rand Paul are the only people that I can even remotely identify with.
Yep.
And that's it.
And they're the absolute fringe of that party. They're not embraced. They have trouble fundraising. They get primaried every single cycle.
They won't fundraise because they're libertarians because none of them will go shake hands and be a politician.
They won't fundraise the way they do.
Dirty. Yeah. This is awful. I have to look people in the eye.
They don't go to the call center and fundraise like they're supposed to. They're not good little Republicans.
But if you look at that, that's the only coalition that's identifiable anymore in the Republican Party. The neocons are dead.
Yeah, the Liberty Caucus.
Caucus is the only thing left. Because Mike Pence and the Christian conservatives, Reagan kind of, they all went and became governors. They're gone.
I don't know about other states, but here in Indiana, all the Ron Paul Republicans joined the Libertarian Party in the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
So I don't know about the Liberty Caucus.
So didn't Matlin.
Mary Matlin, yeah.
Raging Cajun's wife.
If you haven't listened to the interview with Mary Matlin and Glenn Beck, you should go listen to it. It's probably on Glenn Beck's website. It was really interesting to hear why she did it, and she was surprised that so many people were surprised by her doing it. And Beck's just like, you're Mary Matlin. You've worked for two presidents. You've worked on more presidential campaigns. You are a Republican establishment type.
There isn't a Republican philosophy anymore.
No.
And so that's why Trump's possible is because there isn't a political party is used to identify, recruit, and train people of similar interests in order to, put candidates forward, educate, fundraise, and create social change. That's all it is.
It's organized around issues more than philosophy.
Right. And what's happened is it's not so much that, I'm not attached to Vessel. If the Democratic Party all of a sudden adopted the Libertarian platform, I'd be a Democrat.
Yeah. Right.
I have no loyalty to any name.
Sure.
You know, so realistically, I don't care what vessel it is, but what happens in a society is that there's a breakdown in the existing governing frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
We're on a precipice. Democratic socialism doesn't really fit the American creation myth of the adventure, casting off. We don't need, we prefer adventure to security.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Republican Party, Ronald Reagan, the shining city on a hill, tax cuts and rugged individualism, whether or not we govern like that's one thing, but that's the image he sold voters. And that was the philosophy of the party.
Right.
Now there isn't one on the right. All there is it just feels good to hit those whiny liberals.
Yeah.
And then on the left, it's free we look college. Like Denmark.
Yeah.
And there isn't an existing framework other than the Libertarian Party to even find compromise in American politics today within the political institutions.
And frankly, the Libertarian Party sucks. I'm going to say it. Because we
need
to...
Not the LPIN.
No, well, sometimes. We need to speak hard truths.
Any party that has people in it has problems.
I'm not saying
it's interpersonal relationships, it happens with every organization you're a part of.
It just feels more intense when there's not as many people to go talk. You can't go talk to a different crowd.
No,
someone else to, like,
there's only 97 people around here. We have to work together.
Yeah, I hate
lock
that
yourself
son of a
in a room
now
and
I'm
get through
folding
it.
Flyers
I'm
with this
not
asshole.
Saying it's because I hate libertarians. I love libertarians. I'm saying that it is because the Libertarian Party doesn't do data for a party of, but you know, if you listen to our interviews with the two candidates for the national chairman, Nick Sarwark, which was a great interview, and Mark Rutherford, which was a great interview. I did those.
I was on one.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot you were there. I was just thinking about my questions and how great they were.
Those were great questions.
Thank you. They were the greatest questions.
He was a lot like Rob Kendall with Trump when he was talking to Sarwark.
I know.
Yeah,
I was like,
it's,
Mark, you're so handsome. The problem is that we have Razor's Edge, which is for something like the Harvard Business Foundation, where they have hundreds of alumni to fundraise, thousands of people to fundraise. You know, it's not a political grassroots data like we need, and the national and therefore the state parties don't have data. They don't manage, you know, they don't have a voter vault like the Republicans used to have. And secondly, I don't think libertarians make the case. They don't make the case like Ronald Reagan made the case for a libertarian world.
That's what I love about Austin. He is an unapologetic, and I don't care if you don't like it. I'm not going to fit my message so that you might give me 2 seconds to try to explain it.
Right.
You're not for me.
Right.
You're a progressive, and I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, that's the way I feel, because I never get to see someone present liberty well and strong. It is apologetic, and I'll try to fit it in here, and I'll be kind of goofy, and I'll put my neck down, and I'm like, why is no one's chin up and, you know, shoulders straight?
Yeah, it goes back to confidence. We have a problem with confidence in this party, and everybody's afraid of bothering people. It's like, no, you need to get out there, and if we aren't confident leaders, if we are not going out there, and that's so much of what we do is talk about, you know, the interpersonal aspect of how to live your life. I mean, it's half Oprah half the time in here. It's because
so many feels.
So many feelings. Because people need to see that you are confident in your beliefs and your opinions.
They look for leadership.
Right.
We're so desperate for leadership right now. Hillary Clinton isn't a leader. The people at this table have authored the same number of legislation that she did in her term in Senate.
That's exactly right.
And so she also gotten a U.S. ambassador killed. There's nothing that says leader about her other than she got lucky and married Bill.
Right.
Like, then there's Donald. Donald's co-opted a strain of anger and people clinging for one last shot at holding on to a cultural norm, I guess you could say, and they're angry about it. And then there's this wide open gap for someone to stand there and say, listen, this is what liberty is. This is how you live it, and let's do this. And look at these two morons. You don't want to vote for them.
Right.
But we don't even want to go negative.
They've both got coalition problems. Hillary's got she's stepped in it on coal.
Her biggest group is going to vote are now registered Republicans.
Absolutely.
Right.
she basically said that she was going to shut down the coal industry and sorry about your jobs. So that's Pennsylvania. That's Ohio, West Virginia. That's Evansville, Indiana. It's going to be brutal for so many areas that she needs to win to try to stitch together.
Their biggest voting block is blue collar men.
Yeah.
And then, white women. But, you know, if she doesn't win like 58% of white women, the thing's over.
Yeah, they've both got a tough road.
They're horrible candidates, but that's the state of American politics and the state of their parties.
But unfortunately, 40% of the vote's automatically in their box because they just push the button when they show up anyway, the straight ticket voting.
Well, they have organizations that no matter what, and this is where I think the real key is, part of the struggle of libertarianism is the decentralization of it. We decentralize power, we award power without earning it. We let everyone have a voice. And we let everyone play because we don't want to be like, that's the worst idea I ever heard and you're a moron.
We're desperate. We're desperate for people to join.
We
so
are.
When they join, we try to give them...
Volunteer.
And volunteer. And, you know, we as a party don't have money. So what we have is we have a little bit of prestige. So we can make you a chairman or we can get you on the ballot or we can give
it's
you
our
a position. That's the only tool we have. And those of us in the leadership try to spend time getting people trained and getting things going, but we all have lives and, you know,
you're working two to three jobs all the time
absolutely.
As a libertarian. That's why everyone gets, there's burnout. You see, hell, we saw it with the last director, the last chairman.
Yeah,
the last two chairmen have gone through it, and I can guarantee you, when we get to November, I am going to be a just a. It's going to be rough.
You won't want
to
see a libertarian ever again.
I will be on libertarian hiatus for months.
But see, that's why I do this, is I know that, and listeners, you complained about our infrequency sometimes, but that's because I've been on hiatus, like, as I've dealt with personal stuff. I mean, it's just very difficult to be involved in politics. And
deal with the regular, like, you know, with changing careers. And trying, you know, in your new job, you were trying to create something rather than just getting tasks handed to you.
I have some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Bernie Sanders has just won the West Virginia primary.
Yeah.
Feel the burn.
Shocking.
As we record this on Wednesday, November.
If they want to win, they should run Bernie Sanders. May 10th. Because he will get the trade union vote, and all these people that are blue collar trust him on that, on trade. Because this election is going to be a lot about the TPP.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton has authored it, and through the Clinton Global Initiative, carved out little, you know, things by campaign donations, little exemptions on things. Hell, it basically creates a brand new system of law for for businesses that exist outside U.S. law. I mean, you can run on things like this, and that's why Donald Trump is taking her biggest voting block. And people don't like it, and it's not a good thing, because there's no intellectual philosophy behind it, a reason why.
So yeah, I think this earlier in the program, I said, listen, once you get into politics, you do have to check principle at the door. How far can you bend that?
You have to,
in your opinion.
To me, if you aren't backed by a philosophical position, because conservatism isn't really one; it's just the rate of change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being careful about not too much overthrow, whereas liberalism is rapid change in the name of justice. And so you have to say, you don't have to necessarily be like, listen, it's all or nothing, because that's ineffective. But then the opposite's ineffective, because it leads to your demise, like what's happened now. So I think the point is that where does that line stop to me? I guess it stops that your platform has to be prioritized. So, for instance, you have to have your 50% of your message has to be, you know, the one thing that really caught a rising tide. 20% maybe, like a secondary issue, like in this campaign, it's going to be about, shockingly, cultural preservation is going to be big, but no one's going to say it that way.
Right.
And then next will be economy and protecting American workers. And then isolationism is going to be a big part of it.
But see, that's the crazy thing. Like, somebody who is a cultural preservationist, like my grandmother, isn't going to vote for Donald Trump.
She doesn't see that's what's happening there.
Right.
Like, that's the, you know, what she sees is it's not civil. There's been, like, a complete collapse of
He's not presidential.
There's
and
nothing
she can't
that
get
says
past that.
There, yeah. And yet, at the same time, there's no one more American that captures what being American is, or what he's Muhammad Ali in politics.
Just a small loan of $1 million.
I got
but
a,
brashness.
A one of those pictures. Your grandmother had one of George W. Yeah. I have my great-grandfather's signed one from Ronald Reagan.
Really?
Do you really?
I do. I really do.
That's cool.
It's very cool.
That's awesome.
To Dwayne, and it's the Ronald Reagan portrait. But nobody's going to want one of those from Donald. Your grandma doesn't want one from Donald Trump.
No. He bought a
She'll
hat.
Throw it away.
And he hates him.
That's a piece of Americana. That is an I like Ike bump, pin. That
I work
is
at
something
I work
you
at
But when you're
have.
No longer around to tell the story, people will see that.
I have.
This is the man that has a Wayne Allen root for president.
I saw the movie that got made about his betting operation with Matthew McConaughey and Al Pacino.
I mean, look at that. The wall of liberty that stands behind you. As I went and on Mother's Day got several tubs for my mom's house, cleaned out everything but my newspaper and magazine collection of things like the Kennedy assassination, Challenger blowing up. I kept all that at my mom's house.
I see a Tom Carnegie bobblehead. That's all I can see
on
there. That's
right. Uncle Sam, Barack Obama, Sam Adams. That Sam Adams bobblehead was given to me by a dear friend, the author of Spanking City Hall, Melissa Hubbard.
You had one thing.
Yeah, there was one
thing.
There
was one thing.
But, oh, well, he hasn't gone there.
But
we're good.
What, that she caused a...
Stop it.
But... It is. It's, you know, I collect political memorabilia, and I have a whole shoebox full of buttons from Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents, Tea Party people that I'm going to put up on the wall back here. But, yeah, I mean, the hat, I work at a comedy show, A. So it's been handy a couple times.
In theory.
Yeah. And B, it is. It's just, it's funny, and it is. It's a piece of political memorabilia. It's an icon.
It perfectly captures the era of where you're in American politics.
This Donald Trump campaign is one that they're going to remember and write about for 40 or 50 or 100 years.
I keep trying to get us away from Donald Trump so we can talk about what you're...
That's the thing is, Donald, you have to set it up that way. Like, the two parties are dying. You know, the chair of the national LP talked about it. Libertarian Party is the only one with growth, and it's doubled in the last 72 hours. It's the only party endorsed by, like, the ACLU on their civil rights stances and their consistency, like, especially with Gary Johnson. The difference between the Libertarian Party and the reason it's growing is two things. It's that the existing parties are no longer capable of governing in a way that people want to see change. It's led to an absolute breakdown because their positions aren't philosophically oriented.
Right.
They're coalition built and they're issue built. And now the issues are changing. And so no longer are they ever able to find middle ground. But there's one that is backed by a philosophical philosophical principles, and that's the Libertarian Party with, like, David Bowes, Principles of Libertarianism. And those are universal because it is that decentralization. It's the lowest common denominator, which is what something like the Bill of Rights is supposed to be. It's that no matter what social planner or academic has this great idea, this is what we're going to do to perfect society. Libertarianism protects you against that no matter what, because it always protects the individual.
Right.
That is the backstop. And that's why it's a framework that works in American politics. You can do a tax cut and pair it with decriminalization bill.
Right.
And get that change. It's the only party with a philosophical and governing framework that applies in American politics.
How do we, because it seems like so many libertarians are so long-winded. Me, I'm the king. I'm the president of your long-winded libertarians.
I only speak in walls of text.
Right. So how do we get it down to a Reagan-esque soundbite? How do we get it to a point where we are, it's the shining city on the hill and we're moving people with speech?
We need optimism.
We do.
We are so beaten down.
We need to not act like we've been in the wilderness, like we talked about earlier. That it needs to be. We need to message in a way that's optimistic, and we talk about giving you control back, and stop with the central planning, and get back to where you are in charge of your life, and we sell a message of hope, and your opportunity to make your future.
Yeah.
Instead of the burden that we all have put on us. Just, you know, for me, it's always economics. So, you know, the personal freedoms are implied, but we have to pay them lip service
or we'll never win a big enough coalition.
Exactly. But the Gary Johnson and the fair tax, that's so simple and easy to understand. And you've had Republicans, I don't know if Democrats have, but Republicans have run on that and embraced it. I still think the fair tax is a very simple and easy to understand thing where you tell somebody, you're going to get all of your paycheck.
Yeah, but you understand, like, you can look at an economics chart and make sense of it, an equilibrium price and supply and demand. The flat tax is so much easier. You're going to pay 10%. It's like tithing at church.
But see, honestly, I just tuned out because I could care less what you're talking about.
But you care about is, you know, you're a Jill Stein libertarian. He's a Mother Earthitarian.
No, I had this conversation with Brett.
I'm surprised he doesn't drive a Prius.
Yeah, the state offenses, the state rape, and I know that's a brutal term, but, like, the state rape is what offends you so much and triggers you to becoming almost anarchist.
So
a tax cut to you is like, eh.
Right, because it's just whatever. Like, so I was actually talking to Brad Lowry and Brett Bittner about this the other day and putting together a grand strategy to bring more Bernie people into the Libertarian Party because, you know, it's the dumbest mistake that we can make, and you get on me about the Trump people because they can be natural allies and we should partner with those people. We should partner with everybody. We should really try as libertarians to be nonpartisan and to not, like, Hillary Clinton is our natural enemy because Hillary Clinton is, if you take the I Side With quiz, she's going to be in the 20s if you're a libertarian. You know, whereas Trump is at 69% for me, Bernie Sanders is at 68, Jill Stein is at 68, Ted Cruz is at 67 for me on my I Side With, whereas Gary's 92. You know, I hadn't taken it since they added Austin and all those guys. But, you know, when you look at where somebody like Brett Bittner came in or where Brad Lowry came in, like, Brad is a guy that is supporting Bernie Sanders, and we look at it and go, how can you possibly do that? You two as economic libertarians lose your mind. And I look at it and I go, yeah, Bernie Sanders is for criminal justice reform. Bernie Sanders is for drug decriminalization. Bernie Sanders is for...
humble foreign policy. 60% right. of Bernie, I embrace, right. and I do get it, and I see why we're losing the people. But I'm always economic first.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't care. I just like good messaging. Like, I just feel like we were talking about what you wanted to do long term in your career the other day, mm-hmm. and Spangle said I was inspired by a libertarian marketer, and I about fell out of my chair.
Yeah,
like what? There one was such a thing, because we struggle with the bumper stickerism of our platform.
Yeah.
And it's for me, it's
so we settled on gray and white.
Liberty chickens. No, yeah. but it's
don't get me started on that.
This is so easy to me because it's what do we really believe in? We believe in the individual controlling their life, right? Right. The other way of putting that is local. What is more local than the individual?
Yeah.
So govern local. Things like that. Things like, personal responsibility doesn't sell. You know what does? Pride, the pride of that. That's the byproduct. Personal responsibility, no one wants that because subsistence farming on your own homestead while you protect it with shotguns from your ANCAP neighbors is not that much of fun.
Right.
But what is fun is the pride that comes from self-ownership and walking tall because you earned it and no one can take it from you.
Yeah.
We just get so fixated on the features and is it better if we actually had a bond system so no one had to, we didn't force people to join into this ANCAP society? We get lost.
We
lose it.
Yeah, we get lost in the technocrat, the technical aspects because we are all so technical
analytical
and we lose. And this is, listen, I'm an ENFJ. I'm an emotional creature.
Really?
I'm an emotion. I never thought I was an emotional person, but apparently I am. When my 20-year-old girlfriend the other day goes, "You just love drama, shut up." I was like, "Me? Like, you are saying that to me? How dare you?" But
I have no feels.
But it is, I look at it and that's what Mary Ruart's book, Healing Our World, I think it is. You can get it at the Advocates bookstore, theadvocates.org. And it is, like, the first time I read it, I went, oh, this is what I've been looking for. Because I have spent so long in the land of INTJ technocrats that Mary Ruart's book was water for my thirsty emotional soul. Like, it was the compassionate emotional argument for libertarianism, and I go, that's the kind of stuff we're missing. Don't tell me about tax cuts. I don't care. Tell me how much.
Don't tell me about private. When private courts compete, we get better verdicts.
Right.
Like that. Yeah. Okay. When I get to utopia, that'll be great.
Right.
Thank you.
You want to torture me, strap me in a chair, and make me watch anything for the Mises Institute. I love those guys. Those guys are awesome. It's just not for me. I'm not that.
There's
a Penn
Jillette libertarian.
Yeah.
And there is a David Friedman libertarian.
Yeah.
The David Friedman libertarian is going to love sci-fi. They're going to be the person that is oddly, totally against anything collective and like where there's a social engineer, but they're always engineer and science types that want to build a perfect society.
Yeah.
And so they get fixated on like the machinations of the state, is what he always says, and how it's inevitable. This system will step by step design into a minarchy system.
Right.
That isn't going to play, but we need that. But that's who we've promoted. There are our thought leaders have come from the right on economics, and that has been a deterrent to anyone that sees someone struggling and doesn't want to say, well, that's their fault that they struggle. I shouldn't have to pay for them because they made bad life decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's prevented us from growing for so long because we just have had a vacuum or a hollow voice on that left.
Well, and that's where, our burden is to say, we have tried. The government has tried to fix it. They've tried to fix it. They've failed to fix it. It's not working. It's just like the drug reform stuff.
Yeah.
You've got to just pull the plug and say, they can't do it. They've proven that they can't do it. Let's go try the libertarian solution.
They meant well, but the path to hell is paved with good intentions, and just leave it at that. Don't antagonize the people you're trying to bring in.
Yeah, you don't have to piss in their Cheerios over it. Just admit defeat and let's try it differently, guys.
Why don't we
together?
Do it, yeah, why don't we do it where instead of a state agency picking the private prison, the person in, you know, the private contractor. Why isn't it a community board? Mm-hmm. Why isn't it community policing? Why isn't it, you know, even that's not ideal, it's closer to where it'll matter.
It's a step in the correct direction.
Yeah.
It feels like they're in control and it won't disengage them from the political process.
So what will happen if we get rid of welfare, if we get rid of federal programs of assistance? We return to the townships. You know, in the township government in here in Indiana.
Poor relief.
Yeah, you go to the township government and you say, listen, I'm behind on my rent. I can't pay my rent. And, you know, this one woman that spoke at a Young Americans for Liberty convention, she was in the West Lafayette township up there. And she came in and she goes, I got 900 applications for poor relief last year. I fulfilled 200 of them because we go out, we walk in their apartment. You know, you walk in here, I'm clearly doing very well. This is a luxury apartment.
You are not getting any poor relief here, buddy. You're going to have to sell one of your two soundboards before we can consider you for public
you've
financing.
You've got a flat screen TV. You've got a nice car.
A Southern Command, if you will.
You've made bad choices with your finances, and the taxpayers are not going to give you relief. Now, if we walk in here and you've got eight kids and things, you know, and it's a case-by-case basis where neighbors are talking, the neighbors going, okay, we've got this pot of money. We're going to buy your kids' school clothes. We're going to pay your electric bill. We're going to help pay this. We're going to help pay that.
And we're going to get you through this very short term, and we're going to do it from the community level.
Right.
The human instinct is to help. Even animals don't like to watch each other suffer.
Exactly right.
And yet, but when we out, you know, when it's not us that's involved in the process of who we help, it becomes moochers versus providers. And so it's easy to see them as the enemy that, God, what do I care? I have my own problems. Why do I have to pay their rent?
Absolutely.
You know, and until you bring those back together, we're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
Problem solved.
Except, you know, I'm toxic and divisive, and so the messenger should not come from me.
Well, you know, we talk about that, and I'm sure it's like this in other local governments too, but I've run for county office 2 years ago. I ran for county office, and I've gotten to know those people, and I respect them, and they all have good intentions. But in Indiana, their hands are tied unbelievably.
The oversight and the process they have to fill out, the bureaucratic demands.
The state government, it all runs downhill. It's just like that classic management, all the birds on a pole where you've got the boss and all the birds crap on the bird below. That's what happens in government. So the federal government tells the state government what you have to do. And our state government has been controlled by Republicans in Indiana for 12 years now. Or 11 years, whatever it is, and they consistently try to cut taxes and do whatever they can to claim victory and claim tax cutting and claim
to run for higher office,
so that they can run for higher office and they can leave with a John Kasich. I cut taxes more than anybody else. Yada yada yada. What they do though is they don't cut services. They don't do any of the austerity measures you need to do.
Yep.
They simply say, "Oh, the state's not responsible for it anymore," and they pass it off to the next level of government below.
Yeah, they offer an unfunded mandate. Yep. They bitch about all the time from the federal government,
and they do it to their counties or their townships. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I didn't get the chance to drive Greg around, but if I take you on a county road in Henry County, Indiana, you will lose a car.
I'm shocked that keeps coming up, because like to me that doesn't make sense, even though, you know, like Broad Ripple has, you know, it's a Yugoslavian roads.
I am going to take you. We are going to go on a road trip, and we're going to film it. It's going to be We Are Libertarians video, and we're going to get out and you're going to stand in a pothole.
Rex with a GoPro and it's shaking like crazy going over the roads.
It is brutal. And we have this conversation on the sidebar all the time, and you know, RFRA is the big deal and it's about gay marriage. I tell you what, if you drive one of the 800 miles of county roads in Henry County, you will think you have gone. We have better roads we paved in Iraq more recently than we have in Henry County, Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
way cheaper to do it here.
Yeah, and they have no money. The locals have to debate on whether or not they're going to add a $25 wheel tax, because that's the only function they have, and the legislature gave them that option.
Republican will touch it, because then they can't go any further up.
No, they're going to do it. They're going to go ahead and do it, and they're going to get bitched at by their constituents, and they have no choice.
Yeah,
but it's legitimately not their fault. They're given a gun, put to their head, and they say, okay, you have to pull the trigger on yourself.
Yep. Right. And if you don't do it, you didn't toe the party line, and you're never going anywhere.
We gave you this tool, and you guys didn't. So next time you need something, don't come to me.
I served on the Help America Vote Act Commission here in Indiana, and the federal government gave us $2 million to spend on, we could fund three items, but we had eight items that were exceedingly necessary to spend money on, but there wasn't any budget. All we had was the $2 million. The legislature couldn't come up with more money. And so these other five essential portions of elections just didn't go funded. Things that would make our elections, because everybody in the commission, Libertarian, Independent, Democrat, Republican, they all wanted to make the process more transparent. They wanted to make it more open. They wanted to make it more efficient. They wanted to make the services better and more reliable and more accurate in terms of our elections. But there were many different federal regulations that prevented those. That,
or set up the terms of
exactly.
How you can even do it.
Yep.
You know, I think, like, it's so hard to see a path forward. It is, like, you know, but, like, we were talking about this governor's race. You know, the dynamics of it, you know, Mike Pence is a political heavyweight. He was a national player, rock star with a meteoric career, kind of, out of nowhere. And then the third highest ranking Republican in the House. And then he gets into a governing, you know, where he has to actually make decisions rather than go on the Sunday shows and talk about how dumb Democrats are. And, you know, he was ill fit to it. And so we're in an election where it was close last time. The same guy that got close, that scared everybody, is now running again. Pence is running on a message of conservatism, which is looking back at nostalgia. It's organizing a group of white voters with gray hair. Dream, you know, they think about when America was great and want to make, I mean, it is. They want to make it great again like it was in the 1950s when they were driving around in their hot rods around the, you know, the county courthouse.
Right.
And that's what he's selling. And that's what a lot of Republicans sell, even their presumptive nominee. Democrats, Hillary at the national level, has no vision forward. And anyone that thinks make America decent or fair again is the biggest marketing moron I've ever seen, and shows me that all the marketing minds were in the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Because she has no message forward. Hers entire, you know, it's the same dynamic here. Her campaign is based off anti-Trump.
Mm-hmm.
She has no plan. John Gregg here has no plan. That leaves the biggest opening in the world in any political race for a libertarian where the same dynamic exists to say this is where we're going because this is where the world's going and we need to stop clinging to the things that clearly no longer work.
Right.
Skate to where the puck is going.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to create a new system for a vision forward. You have to say, listen, decentralization, look at the world. Bitcoin, you know, we're a global world, operates in real time. There's very few systems from the past that apply and function well in today's digitized world, an atomized world. And so that's the, you know, that's where a libertarian can create the vision for the future by saying we have to give the power back to the people closest to it because trying to control it has created Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Or Mike Pence and...
And John Gregg.
Yeah, who's really just, you know, Diet Pence.
Really?
I mean... It's a weird thing for libertarians, though, because we don't like to look into the future and give a solution. We haven't had to yet. We've had a much easier time. Like, Ron Paul was the worst messenger in the world from that perspective, and Rand is, too, because they never say, when I'm president or this is what it will look like.
Right.
They say, well, God, Rick Santorum's not a conservative. Nobody gave more Medicare Part D giveaways than that guy. And, right. It scores points with us. But it doesn't give anyone else a reason to vote for
him. It's not the optimism that we talked about,
right.
the forward-looking candidate.
It feels good. Like, you got the, you know, the
soundbite. Somebody's preaching to me.
Yeah, at least we landed a soundbite finally.
Right. Somebody's been saying exactly what I've been saying for 40 years.
In the Fed.
And that's why when I listen to a lot of other libertarian podcasts, I'm just like, ugh, no wonder we're growing. Because I hear them like, well, if they had taken our advice on foreign policy 40 years ago, we wouldn't be in this position. It's like... Yeah, but you've just spent 15 minutes talking about how you've been vindicated by America losing.
And if frogs had wings, they wouldn't bump their ass.
Right.
Like, you can't go and look back and give yourself a pat on the back while you're still losing.
You have to start right. from where you're at today.
You do. And that's
because the American electorate doesn't care.
No.
You can spend about a sentence saying, hey, by the way, we were right 4 years ago. But then you better move on to what's happening next.
I know. We are the least qualified to do this. What do you – I mean, come on, scholars.
But nope. Scholars are never the people that can. It's Donald Trump's no scholar. He has white papers.
No kidding.
But he is. I mean, he is a smart guy because he figured out how to hack the media for $2 billion by being outrageous.
Right.
You know that hell. We can't be afraid to learn from that.
So
we don't have the resources, but if we create controversy, we can seize the moment.
So this has been a discussion at work. So I work for a major radio comedy show. Okay, it's the Bob and Tom Show. It's a nationally syndicated radio show. Its foundation is comedy. It's think of SNL for radio, okay?
It's less libertarian wall.
Right, yeah. No politics, we're libertarians. You can get a free podcast, check it out. That'd really help me out. But...
Sorry, I was just added to a secret group on Facebook. Oh, that's always how fun, many, isn't it?
How many secret groups are libertarians going to create?
How many?
I just start to wonder how many I'm not in yet.
I'm aborting. If I'm going to run as the strong chair, mark my words, 5-point plan, messaging, no opinions until they're earned. Get in line.
Like, it literally, like, how many message groups can you and I be in together, Greg?
I honestly, it's so overwhelming at this point, I don't look at any of them. It's like I was saying, I just have quit adding anything to the calendar and then wait for a panic call.
I just keep getting added to these message groups, and I'm like, I sit down at the end of the day or whenever I have 5 minutes and I'll check them, but it's just exhausting. It's hard being thoughtful and it's hard being leaders, Greg. It really is, isn't it?
You don't get a self-anoint.
It's just hard being the smartest libertarians in this apartment.
Now, that is us being very libertarian.
Oh, yeah. So
announcing our intelligence to everyone else in the room.
So my point is, yes, I know. It's been an hour and a half. Calm down over there.
I'm just trying to make sure that you know that you... I know you don't go in as early as you used to.
No, I know. Go to bed? That's why I put that big clock back there, so that way I know what time it is. But I don't have the time anxiety now that I go to work for a morning radio show, which does comedy. And so we were at lunch today talking about various characters, because characters call in. One of them is Donnie Baker. He's hilarious.
You want to buy a boat?
Yeah, we have Captain Dave, hilarious. Bill Clinton, quote-unquote, calls in, hilarious. And we have a Donald Trump character that calls in.
That's not really Bill Clinton.
No. Steve Salgi is a great voice actor. I've thought about having him out to maybe a live show or
something.
That'd
be awesome.
That'd be
great.
Yeah,
to do Bill and Trump and Bernie. He does great impersonations. But so we talked about the Trump character. And the guy who was in, real smart radio guy, real big wig, goes, yeah, I like the Trump thing, but like your guy doesn't say anything more outrageous than Trump. Like,
well, yeah.
If you're going to do that character... Like, because the point of comedy in that vein is to push the button beyond. Right, to make it novels, to make a neural connection that has never been made before, or by pushing the boundaries of being outrageous. And so when your guy and your comedy writers can't think of something more outrageous than the guy is saying...
Than eating a taco bowl?
Right, like, you can't...
And
no one could
get noticed at all the entire time everyone was talking about it and couldn't stop themselves.
So there's a huge problem in comedy. It's not just us. It is literally, there was somebody who wrote about it in, like, the New Yorker or the New York Times or whatever, about how comedians... Trump is so one-note from a comedy perspective. Like, sort of like Obama. Like, what could you make fun of Obama for? He was just sort of... right, boring.
It was a speech pattern thing and like tempo more than anything.
But Bush had mannerisms that you could take it and make it ridiculous, and that was funny. Like, think Will Ferrell doing Bush. It was very funny, and he made fun of himself. With Trump, he's so above what people can think of in terms of ridiculousness that comedy writers can't make fun of him.
You entered your speech to declare for the presidency on an escalator.
Right.
I mean, he's comedy. He is
thought that it was good. He thought that it was appropriate, or didn't think. I don't know. It's like the Rob interview with Trump. It's great performance art.
He is putting on the greatest performance in the history of American politics.
Right.
Because he is convincing these people that he is the hope and change for the future by talking about going backward. And all, think about it. He's talking about going backward, making it great again by presenting and thinking that's the vision forward. 1950s.
He's like a Pat Buchanan protectionist.
Yeah.
With
Ross Perot money.
With Ross Perot money. And
he does have a very good sense. Like, in the room, he reacts instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Like with the media thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we love the press. I love the press. Like, he just reads a room. And it's going to see art. It isn't going to see a politician. Yeah. That's why Hillary gets 80 and he had 3,000.
Right. Because it's a show. It was a comedy. It was a comedy show.
It's the greatest show in American politics right now.
It really was. I mean, it was like going to see a comedy show. Okay, so we got to wrap up. Enough about Trump. I have a feeling we're going to talk a lot about Trump. So you, Greg, What are you going to do? Are you going to vote your principles? Are you going to vote for a third party now that you're a libertarian? Are you going to vote for Trump? Choose your words carefully. What are you going
to
do?
Why would I have to choose my words carefully?
We have ways of persuading you to vote libertarian now.
Do you now? Oh, no. This is a point of contention.
There are repercussions if you don't do the right thing.
There are consequences. There are consequences.
I believe in self-ownership.
I don't really care how you're voting. I just wanted to bring that up.
I know you did.
All right. Let's wrap up. Final thoughts. Shameless self-promotion. Anything you missed, anything you want to talk about. The floor is yours, young Jeremiah.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris. Once again, we were victorious in the Rex Bell campaign. So if anybody that's interested and has been following along with this from across the country on We Are Libertarians and the vast broadcast network.
Who built that site and what was used?
Doesn't matter. If you'll jump on electrexbell.com and throw us a little bit of money there, we would appreciate it. We'll put it to good use. We've got a lot of signs, a lot of marketing materials, a lot of Facebook ads to put out there. And if you guys have taken a liking to that campaign and been following us along the way, give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/electrexbell. And jump on there and give us 20 or 30 bucks, and it will be well received and spent properly.
Go to stinkyshorts.com
to pick up Rex's book. It's a collection of all of his short stories.
It's a libertarian parables.
Exactly. It's right. Very easy to read. It's probably unlike anything that a bona fide libertarian writes in a 4-point font. Rex wrote in about a 16-point font. Very easy to read. You can read it yourself, pass it on to your friends. He's probably, I couldn't even begin to imagine how many copies he sold, but I bet every copy he sells has been passed around 5 or 6 times.
He's in his third printing, but if you go to wearelibertarians.com and you go to authors and it drops down, or you go to articles and it drops down, you can choose Rex Bell. We've got 600 columns by Rex at wearelibertarians.com.
So that's the political side. The personal side, it is May in Indianapolis. I enjoy listening to the AM radio here. You drive around town, there's an hour-long talk radio just on Indy cars. And then after that, there's the Talk of Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson. If you like the nerdity of We Are Libertarians, jump on, look up Donald Davidson and just listen to the history of the Indianapolis
Motor
Speedway.
It's Trump voter wall, basically.
It basically, Sam Goldstein, Brett Bittner, Nick Sarwark, and you went out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway the day after the convention, and Sam was like, he's like a tour guide. He goes to every car, and he has the whole story.
And he knows more than the actual paid historian.
Yeah. It was fun. We took Nick around the speedway, and I sent him a little bit of money in his I gave Mark money too, but I sent a little bit of money Nick's way for his campaign, and said, hey, I'll be watching the cars on during Memorial Day, and he told me to enjoy the races. But yeah,
Peterson asked if we were coming out, and I go, no, I got the 500. He's like, it's only the future of the country at stake. I was like, it's not.
I'll tell you what, it's outreach for me. I was last year at the 500, I was passing out Libertarian Party of Indiana koozies in turn three.
That's where you should
do it. It's an outreach event. It's fun. Yeah.
There's people there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should go where the people are.
It is the largest single-day sporting event in the United States. There will be over 300,000 people. There are 260,000 seats that are sold. There will be 50,000 to 70,000 people in the infield.
And they are great Americans.
It's a huge crowd. And it is going to be a libertarian crowd in turn three this
year. Follow Jer and I on Twitter.
I think
Twitter.
There's going to be a lot of Trump shirts.
Follow me on Twitter, facebook.com/Jeremiah.
Donald might be the
I may wear my hat.
You will get so many high fives.
Oh, my God. I'm going to wear the hat.
He's going to have 260,000 voters all in the same place.
He's going to wear a Tony Kanaan shirt because it looks a little Mexican, and a Donald Trump hat.
I am praying that my dad actually will take me, but Sharon never wants to go, so I usually get to go. All right, Greg Lenz.
Let's see. Anything? One, thanks, Jeremiah, for coming. Appreciate it. I always love it when Jeremiah's on. He likes to troll you as much as I do.
Yeah, it's fine.
Thank you, Greg.
That's not a shared sentiment. Did you catch that? Yeah, it's fine.
In spite of our friendship, we do get to come on once in a while.
Outreach, quote unquote.
Yeah, yes. We like to make him feel good.
I self-invite. I pay my way onto here. I send a check every month, and every so often I'm allowed through the door.
Apparently. But no, congratulations, because you did a wonderful job running Rex's primary. Well, it's not technically a primary, but winning and getting him the nomination. I have full faith in you, and I think you guys will make an impact and do well. If it was anyone else running the campaign, I would probably not. But I have full faith in Jeremiah Morrill running a real political campaign.
It'll be all right.
The inspirational character that is Chris Spangle today.
You know, he doesn't get a survivor celebrity to work from, you know. Yeah. Like, he had a, you know.
I'm working with Rex Bell and Stinky Wilmot, okay?
And Rex is the man. Indiana. Rex is the man, but Rex didn't go on Survivor.
No, but maybe for the reelect.
Yeah. Yeah. I, that's not a bad idea, really. But yeah, so congratulations. And then is there anything coming? I don't think there's anything. We have the live show. Yep.
May 23rd.
May 23rd. I'm going to be at the I'll be at the National Convention for a couple days.
You're going to make it.
Cool. Really? How are you persuaded?
How was I persuaded?
Yeah, how were you persuaded to make the National Convention?
I felt like the LP has a chance to stand out on a major stage.
Are you going to be a delegate?
And
are you going to be an establishment delegate?
I'm not
delegate?
Going to any of the crap. I'm not going to go talk about time zones and bylaws. Yeah. Like, I'd rather kill
you
myself.
Don't want to vote for Johnson or Peterson and be the make the decision?
I support Gary Johnson. He is my... He on paper, I would vote for him, and I would shout him from a mountaintop, and then I see him in person, I'm like, oh my God, I can't even introduce him to people. And like, I know that's bad,
right?
But that's the way I feel. And I want, you know, I'd much rather introduce Austin Peterson to liberty-friendly Republicans and personal friends who are still learning about libertarianism, because they'd be like, man, this guy inspires me, than Gary talking about how he built his house from his hands, which is a great accomplishment, but it's... It doesn't sell to me. I want someone proud.
So let's get back to your trip to Orlando.
So are you going to are you gonna get your own room?
I thought I could keep going.
Are you
going
to get your own room, or are you going to share a room? That's good. That's economical.
You going to like go SeaWorld? And,
I don't know what you guys are implying.
Are you going to Disney World? Oh, we're just asking. We're being friends.
Are you?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound at all like
spots.
And look, I just gave you these great compliments, and you son of a... Now you're looking over there with the Canadian.
You know, the funny joke is that Spangle is... I was born 2 miles from Canada.
I know.
And yet Spangle is the resident Canadian here.
So there's a podcast that I love called The Mike O'Meara Show. And listen, if you hear anything on radio, you're hearing it because that person stole it. And so they have a joke on there about Canada invading America. And I thought, well, that's pretty funny. And that would be a good way to kind of illustrate the ridiculousness of nationalism and our foreign policy by making Canada a threat. Because what happens if, you know, 98% of Canadians live on the border, they're plotting, they send Michael J. Fox over here to scout, Alan Thicke comes down and starts diagramming
Shania
cities.
Twain starts singing the national
right.
anthem.
And then
Bieber, though?
Bieber?
That was a pretty good troll.
Yeah, they really got us good with that. But then, you know, so they're planning an invasion, and then what if Canadians occupy Indianapolis? And so somehow, someone, I think it was Troy Hill... somewhere in 2012, 2013.
Early on, because I still didn't get the inside joke.
Yeah,
and I was new.
Turned it into me being Canadian. And
eh?
And it
is
really,
a Mountie.
It just, I finally had to just say to everyone, it's not funny anymore.
Which made it way more funny for us.
You've beaten that horse deader than the meme boys.
Chris Maple Leaf Spangle.
Oh, so yeah.
So neither of you are going to be down there.
No, I'm going to be in turn three of the Indy 500.
Dead serious.
If the Libertarian Party would quit hosting these conventions during Memorial Day weekend, I would attend more of the conventions.
They are. This is the last
next
year.
The next one is going to be 4th of July in New Orleans in 2018 or whatnot.
That'd
and I'll be
fun.
There.
Yeah,
and we'll
I'll
have a hell
that.
Of a time.
All right. I really
you can bring your date. You can bring your date, and I'll find one, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Listen, if you are a young Liberty lady ready to spread your seed of liberties, then we have a man for you, Jeremiah Morrill. You've heard his voice.
That's right.
He's an honorable young man. He's got many.
I'm quite the catch.
He's got many square feet.
We've got a swimming pool, a bass boat. Okay.
By
November, we'll have a pool liner. Again.
Somehow you managed to sink a pool.
Yeah.
He's got 3 living rooms and 4 TVs.
No, so five.
5 TVs.
5 TVs.
Two garages.
The list is just
it's
send your applications. Right. Find me on Facebook. No. Send me a message. Greg's taken. Spangle's taken. But I'm still out there.
Greg. Yeah. We don't need applications. We need that was cold. That was further than I was going to. That was brutal.
I know it was.
Listen, I got.
I'm voting for Pence.
Listen, I don't need applications. I just need photos. Send them to Spangle at wearelibertarians.com. I will weed them out for Jeremiah. Was that shallow? I'm sorry.
Well, I think your girlfriend might have some content with you being the vetting process for.
He's my wingman. Everybody's going to be Chris Spangle approved.
My sweet girlfriend. She's. I won't get into it. I'll get in trouble. She's
We don't want to get anybody in any trouble tonight.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have anything other than show up May 23rd or else. All right. Thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Thanks to Greg. Thanks for to Jeremiah. Thanks for bringing the pizza. Oh, wait. Oh, well, now this is awkward. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.